This is Sierra Dahl with Municipal Sustainability and Energy Forum, and I'd like to welcome you here today to a conference that's talking about working with utilities on solar and the policies involved there. And we have a few people on a panel. It's more of an open forum type call today, but George Wilsey is on the call. Jerry Braun, Ron Kamen, John Bernhardt are the ones who will be talking primarily about the solutions to the problem. So, Jen, why don't you go ahead and tell us a little bit about what it is you'd like us to help you out with.
Sierra, thank you very much. My name is Jennifer Hill. I am in Marquette, Michigan, a city of about 22,000 people on the shores of Lake Superior in the Upper Peninsula of Michigan. And our community has a municipal utility, and it serves not only our facility, but also nine of the surrounding townships. It has about 17,000 meters on it, primarily residential and commercial. No large industry is served by the utility, and we are. It has a budget of about $54 million. We have a coal-fired power plant built in the early 1980s that is been using Western coal, now uses a mixture of Eastern and Western coal. It's planned to shut down because they have just purchased 3 natural gas turbines reciprocating the RICE engines that run on both natural gas and diesel. That was bonded at $71 million last year, went into operation this summer. And what the community is coming to understand, and this was, is that we may have missed an opportunity to invest more heavily in renewables when the decision was made for the natural gas plant. And I can go into that specifics if necessary. But the primary question is, given that we just made this significant investment in natural gas, given that the coal plant is going to be shutting down, and given all the changing economics around battery storage, the rooftop and the small load of this utility, it seems like a ripe opportunity for distributed generation. And our current rates are at about 19 cents a kilowatt hour for basic residential. Utilities around us are charging as much as 24 and 25 cents a kilowatt hour because of our very rural nature and antiquated systems. And our local, the Marquette Board of Light and Power also does have an AMI system in place. That investment was made about 5 years ago. So they're not completely technological Luddites, I can't say that much, but there's a lot of concern that there's an elected 5-person board of directors, and they want to set a rooftop solar net metering price that they're estimating at 6 cents a kilowatt hour. So the question of what that rooftop solar is going to look like, that pricing and that policy. Two other facts about the system. The largest users are the city of Marquette, the hospital, and we have a university here of about 8,000, Northern Michigan University, that has its own heating plant, natural gas powered, with biomass as a backup. And they're looking very seriously at also investing more heavily in solar. So that there's a chance that some of the big users are probably going to be going off the system in the next few years, particularly as batteries become more viable. So the question of what could be a way forward as a path to reach more renewables is the question I'm hoping we can discuss, learning from other communities' experiences.
Okay. George or Jerry, would you like to comment on that? Or Ron, thank you, or John?
Well, yeah, this is Jerry. I can comment, certainly. But could I ask a question first? The 6 cents per kilowatt hour was mentioned in the context of net energy metering. Is that the price for excess beyond net generation, or?
Correct, it is.
But if, okay, so I see. Okay, well, you know, it's very interesting that we have a similar issue here in relation to our community choice program in Davis, California. I guess my comments would be that, you know, there's a, the 6 cents might not be high, you know, might be a, not be a good a price that would attract much rooftop solar or on-site solar. I think it would be difficult to get much in even in California, where the, you know, the retail sector, solar retail sector, is pretty mature. I think in a place where you don't have a retail infrastructure yet, that price probably won't work. You know, and I guess my general comment is that you know, you probably need to account for you know, the you know, the playing catch up, I guess, would be the right way of saying it. Here we have, you know, penetration of rooftop solar at a level of 25%, going, you know, heading to 50. But there's a reason, and that is that we started decades ago, and in addition, we have attractive demographics, you know, from a community point of view, for national retailers to take a look at us, and we also have mature local retailers that are doing a good job, which really helps. Plus, there's enough penetration here that people can see what their neighbors are doing, and they tend to ask questions and follow suit. So you don't have those advantages. I have a few comments that I would offer from our experience with community choice here that kind of complicate things, but they may not be relevant to this conversation. So I'll stop there.
All right. I see we have a few other people that have joined that could be relevant, and some of the other people on the call are Ronald Larson, Richard Ripstein from Massachusetts, Matt Renner, and Evan, I assume that's you.
Yes, I'm on.
Okay. Michael Walton from Chattanooga, Kleena Robb, and Karen Egerman. So does anybody else have any insight as far as how she might approach this whole problem? And if you didn't hear all of it, I'm sure she'd be happy to explain a little bit more.
I'll start. This is Ron Larson. Northern Michigan University, incidentally, I'm a graduate of University of Michigan, Ann Arbor, but that Northern Michigan University has been a leader in biochar, and I'm not sure what's there. I know virtually nothing about it, but the name is, the word biochar is associated with Marquette. And I think that there could be, I'd be glad to get more involved and send more information. The other thing I wanted to get into the conversation is that Colorado's main utility, Xcel, announced within just the last few days the results of hundreds of bids. The average price for wind is under 2 cents a kilowatt hour, and so I don't know how low the lowest is, but the average of, I think, dozens of bids was under 2 cents, and the average price for solar was only a little bit over 3 cents. So I'd be glad to talk more about it later. Over.
Well, that's amazing. I'm glad to hear that. So anybody else? Kleena, any insight from Virginia?
Well, I think those Excel numbers, if I understand them correctly, is those are large utility scale projects, and it's a little bit of apples and oranges because of that. But
Ken, is there enough up there going on in Upper Michigan in the area of wind? You certainly have plenty of it along the lake.
There's wind on Lake Michigan side. We're on the Lake Superior side. It is difficult to sight it here given the geology and the lakes, the ice on the lake, and the incredible storms that we have. You can take down a laker. It'd be equivalent to North Sea conditions. And so wind hasn't – we do have a 100-megawatt project proposed for a former Air Force base just 20 miles out of town. The problem is finding a purchaser. The county has – it's county-owned land at this time, and the county has put a 5-year lease on it for solar development, and it's a matter of bringing in a purchaser, more likely to be the large investor-owned utility in our area, if they can figure out a deal.
George, do you have any insight on this?
I think the idea of targeting sites, like you were just saying, is probably a really good strategy to use in a situation like this. And I don't know if we have any of the Clean Coalition folks or Optony folks on the call, but
there's a couple of them here.
Okay, maybe I'll let them talk because I think I'd like to see if they think that would have some application here.
John,
this is John Bernhardt with the Clean Coalition, and so we do a lot of work really focused on trying to create opportunities for local renewables. So, you know, any type of local renewable generation connected to the distribution grid. So the scenario that you've laid out here, Jen, is very much kind of like in our wheelhouse. And I think kind of there's a couple of things I think are in your favor. One, that's a municipal utility, so kind of locally responsive. And ideally, you know, I think you can more easily make the case around trying to create some programs that stoke local energy development. Local renewable energy projects can have kind of that clear connection to strengthening the local economy and keeping some of those energy dollars local. So I guess kind of one question that I have is, where does the utility stand with this? Well, do they have any kind of stated renewable energy goals? Does the city have any renewable energy goals? Or is there any type of kind of useful backdrop like that might be helpful for kind of understanding where various stakeholders are at?
Thank you. Good question. City of Marquette does not have energy goals. Michigan has a renewable portfolio standard, but the municipality does not have to meet them. The way the laws are currently written, only the regulated utilities are required to meet them. And the utility does have 10% hydro from that's been there for 150 years that the iron mine put in the late 1800s. It's still operational. And that's actually a concern. The way the board is currently, I had a board member tell me after the last meeting they didn't want to be seen as favoring solar. They see it very much that they have to keep rates the same for all class of ratepayers, or within a class of ratepayers, I mean. And so it is not – I think keeping dollars local is that is actually something that would resonate. And I will the way that things are now currently running, now that the natural gas – and it was very exciting that the natural gas came in. That was – they beach-landed them off Lake Superior, off a barge, and trucked them up. It was a big deal in town. But what they do now is they run the natural gas during the day, and then at night they buy off the grid from Wisconsin at 3 cents a kilowatt-hour or 4 cents a kilowatt-hour because it's cheaper. So we went from having a problem of having enough supply when we just had the coal plant that's not doing very well and was it's old and not necessarily needed a lot of investments and things, and it was not seen as reliable as they would like. Natural gas is seen as more reliable, turn it on, turn it off. And then this bonus that they don't have to run it all the time and really have very much an emphasis on lowering cost of production and lowering their own expenses. Mm-hmm. And not seeing the vision of what renewables could bring to the community.
Gotcha. Okay, that's helpful to know, because both in terms of maybe a lack of stated goals that the utility needs to work towards is always can kind of create some natural momentum towards kind of designing mm-hmm. local renewable energy programs that are set to be effective and actually bring projects online. And then also always the capacity question is an interesting one. So when utilities have plenty of capacity, the appetite for spending additional dollars for, you know, local renewable generation tends to be less interest in that when there's not a need for capacity.
This is Kleena.
Go ahead.
So I was just going to ask, where's the natural gas coming from?
Wisconsin, she says, hesitating. Somewhere fracking, I'm assuming.
Okay, because, you know, obviously utilities love natural gas now because the prices are low. But what utilities give you is stability in terms of fuel costs, because once you get the plant in, you don't have the uncertainties of what's going to happen to you don't have fuel pricing in the future. So if you're looking for price as an argument, natural gas prices are only low now. So if you're looking for price stability in the long term, natural gas may not be where you want to put all, you may not want to put all your eggs in that basket. Plus, if it's being imported, you know, again, that's that's not a local product.
Right.
Can I just ask, has there been any pushback to this idea that they can't favor solar?
Well, that's what I'm working on.
It's in the public interest, and you said so they can determine that, and you can muster the political will by using the social cost of carbon as well as the economic benefits and the health benefits from particulate matter avoided, all of that stuff. Near and far impacts. They're all arguments for why it should be favored and the price incentive should be set at a level to make it happen.
Would you want to identify yourselves before you speak so we all know who it is? I mean, Kleena, we know because there's only one other woman beside you. So, but anybody else?
I'm sorry, this is Rick Riebstein from Boston.
Okay, thanks, Rick.
Yeah, unfortunately, we send our particulate matter to Ontario or out onto the lake for the most part. Just isn't an issue here, and the coal boats. I do make every barge that comes in with coal is $1.1 million. That's made an impression on people because we can see it when it comes in and it's very visible, and that number's a nice big round number. But the barge traffic is also seen as a benefit because that means iron is leaving and being sold, and it's money back in our pockets. It's an interesting question up here. And then the question of global warming here is still an open question, although I'm hoping I might actually get high schoolers at the next meeting, which I'm pretty excited about. The high school wants to put solar panels on their building, and so there's a group of technology-oriented kids that have worked with the local utility, and so that's another avenue into this crazy idea that this intermittent power might actually be something that's appropriate for us. That really is where the conversation still is here.
So, Karen Eggerman, do you have anything to contribute to this? You're involved with smaller type cities. Are you there?
I'm here. I just on mute.
Well, I have some thoughts, but I don't know if any of them are appropriate, so I need to check in with some of my contacts and see if it makes sense. Okay. Anybody else?
This is Michael Walton in Chattanooga. We also have a municipal utility, but they only do distribution, whereas TVA does generation and transmission. But similarly, they don't have to answer to the state regulatory authority. I think the big challenge in sort of such a small energy market when you're looking at intermittent generation is the storage question. I mean, do you guys have any ideas in terms of utility scale storage? Are you looking at distributed storage? Have you sort of put much thought into that part of it?
Well, I think that's it's coming along, and again, in relation to what's happening around us, this is helpful to me. So as I said, the utility around us is UPCO, which is charging 26 cents a kilowatt hour. They've actually hit their net metering cap. No other utility in Michigan has come anywhere near that. It's only 0.5%. And so many people have left their system. The people of means have left. It's just as the death spiral has actually begun there. And we have a technological university up here called Michigan Tech, where they're actually helping, many of them who've left are those people, and they are helping two other small, even smaller communities around us. Total number of users is 2,000 between these two small cities, but they're now actively looking at bringing solar onto their systems in Berrega and Lance, the communities of Berrega and Lance, which are also tribal. One of them is a tribal community. So I'm going to have that example, and then a professor at Michigan Tech named Joshua Pierce published a paper last year in Energy Policy that demonstrated by 2020 it'd be worth it for about 70% of the users in the UP with storage to leave the system. Our rates are so high, and the system is so antiquated.
That's sort of exactly what I was thinking, it seems like part of your leverage is going to be sort of just demonstrating the economics of that. I mean, there's no reason to even want 6 cents a kilowatt hour from the utility if you can save 20 cents by installing storage. There's so much arbitrage there that, you know, there's lots of opportunity. You could easily make a system pay for itself with those kinds of economics. Whereas here, our difference is only like 1 cent. You know, we're only paying 10 cents a kilowatt hour, where, you know, they're willing to buy back the solar for 9 cents. So it's a lot harder to make the math work on that. And it used to be just retail rate. So storage just didn't have an ROI. Now, the other thing to think about with your hydro, though, is thinking about potentially using that as pumped storage.
Yeah, and we don't quite have, so as I understand it, whether our geology will allow that or not, we had a dam failure, actually, in 2003, quite spectacular.
Wow.
That is, I will put that down. It actually threw out... It put 6 feet of water in the other coal plant that we have that powers our iron mine. But that is an interesting question. And there's a giant pump storage facility in lower Michigan that is people are very aware of, the Ludington facility. The question of batteries, and I know that is, and I strongly suspect that that's where the university is going to go, and then that's going to be a big sea change when that happens. So I'm also curious on the question of like the tariff versus net metering idea for solar. Has anyone dealt with that? sort of stepping away from net metering into other kinds of valuations. Has anyone seen that as effective, or should that be really continue to follow that line of net metering?
Well, the Muni in Austin has a value of solar rate that I think is a good example of that, at least. I'm sure other people have other good examples.
Yep, this is John with the Queen Coalition. A lot of the work that we've been doing with various municipal utilities and CCA programs is around the feed-in tariff, which is essentially the standard offer program, much like the value of solar tariff that was mentioned in Austin Energy territory. And one thing that we see as a big value for this type of approach, I guess there's a couple. One is net metering. It's been a very successful and effective policy for driving distributed solar in particular situations. Ideally, and most commonly, when it's like a single-family detached house that's owner-occupied. But when you get into kind of stickier situations in which it's split-metered properties, multi-tenant properties, non-owner-occupied, large sites that have big siting potential but low on-site load, net metering is a difficult policy to make work for those types of properties. So through the creation of kind of a standard offer program, you can actually really simplify the process for local renewable projects to be built in a contract at a clear rate at which they're going to sell the power to the utility. And you can really incent some development that otherwise wouldn't happen. So I don't say that to actually say that it's a replacement at all for net metering. I think they're actually quite complementary policies. But utilities, I think, are looking harder at those types of policies, kind of the standard offer, oftentimes with the idea that they'll set a really low fixed price and nothing will happen. But if you're able to set the fixed price at a reasonable range, utilities are oftentimes like the fact that you maintain that buy-all, sell-all arrangement with your customers, right? So customers aren't spinning their meter back to zero. Rather, they're just selling all the kilowatt hours they generate to the utility. And they can give some additional visibility over those assets because they buy that energy. They see that as a generating resource and it's connected on the utility side of the meter. So I'm not sure if that's a discussion that's been had with your utility up there, but if so, I'd be really curious to kind of hear any reactions they had to that.
Let me just throw in another comment on that. This is George.
I'm not sure if Jen's still here. She may have lost connection. Jen, are you here?
Oh, our audience went away.
Yes. Yeah, I see. I'm sure it wasn't intentional. It could have been something happened. It is Upper Michigan. I used to live there for 15 years, so I know what that's all about, especially in the wintertime.
Should we just hold on a minute?
This is Evan. I'd like to throw in a question that I think others besides Jen can answer from understanding what she said and what they know. I've heard three different ranges of prices in connection with this. One was buying cheap hydro from another utility. Maybe it was Ontario Hydro at only 2 or 3 cents a kilowatt hour at night. Another number I heard was early on to talk about something like 6 cents a kilowatt hour. And I think that was for a net metering price, but I'd like clarification of where that 6 cent price was. And then I think I've heard 13 to 20 cents per kilowatt hour as maybe utility retail prices around Jen, maybe rather than in her own municipal utility. Can someone comment on those numbers where they have some experience?
Well, I think the she said that the 3 cents at night came from Wisconsin. So it's I don't know if they've got a grid in Wisconsin that is just, there may be wind facilities or other dumping power on the grid that makes the system power pretty cheap at night, which is why the natural gas plant isn't run at night.
You're back. Okay, good.
Yeah, that was very frustrating. A classic example of rural Company for Rural Broadband, one or the other.
Yeah, she lost your cell phone service. I just got the message. So, okay, go ahead. Is that Kleena? Was that you?
Well, we were just talking about the different numbers that have been thrown around. The my understanding, Jim, was that you said that the natural gas plant isn't run at night because you're getting 3-cent power from Wisconsin. Is that grid power?
Right.
Okay. And then the 6-cent per kWh was the price that's being thrown out for net metering. And then I understand your system prices were like, did you mention 26 cents per kWh?
That's the system next to us. And so it's been said at meetings, well, at least we're not them.
Is yours 20?
It's 20, yeah. With fixed, that's including the fixed rate. I pay $15 a month, which is 30 to 40% of my bill on my 1,400 square foot house. They raised rates 30% in October 2016. That also got a lot of people's attention.
So, Jen, without the fixed rate, this is Ron Kamen in Earthkind Energy in New York. Without the fixed rate, what's your per kilowatt hour rate about?
I think it's 15. Sorry, I don't have that number off.
Yeah, so this is Ron Kamen again. I mean, it seems to me with a municipal utility, you know, you guys have the opportunity to purchase solar and/or wind power really in bulk is almost a community solar or community wind project. And with the type of municipal opportunity being able to aggregate everybody's purchases, you should be able to beat that number really dramatically, especially during peak prices. So with solar, I mean, at the very least, you know, there's prices now down as low as 5 cents per kilowatt hour in the southeast part of the country. 10 cents per kilowatt hour delivered is a pretty standard price in New York State for almost any size project. And it would seem to me there'd be a way of structuring a type of municipal purchase that would benefit all your ratepayers and all the stakeholders, and simultaneously get renewables into the grid in a really significant fashion.
And how do we pay off the natural gas plant while we do that? I think that ultimately. I'm realizing, hearing this.
So you guys own the natural gas plant, the municipal utility?
We do. Although I could trade the Brooklyn Bridge for it, maybe.
What does your utility say the cost of generation is at the natural gas plant?
I believe it's 8 or 9. Yeah, because natural gas is cheap right now, as you say. And the forecast is, you know, they take heart. The forecast is that it stays that way, you know, 3 to 5 years.
And what percent of your power does the gas plant do?
90.
This is Jerry. I just want to make a short comment. You know, the thing that we're talking about is kind of steady state economics. I think both rooftop net metered solar and community solar are not going to eat into demand that quickly. It takes some time to, you know, set up a retail industry and also to develop larger community scale plants. So I think you're looking at penetration levels initially, you know, below 10% that are not going to affect the natural gas plants' economics that much, and further are not at a level of penetration that really creates so-called intermittency concern. You know, demand is variable, so is supply for wind and solar, and at low at low percentages, it's really something the distribution grid can handle. It's something that doesn't really impact other generation that much. So I think it'd be good to just have a plan for getting started, and then be aware of the longer term optimization. But it doesn't need to be optimized right now.
Yeah, this is George, and I think that's a really excellent point. Everything I'm hearing sounds like there needs to be a long-term plan to integrate all these resources in a in a sensible way that can be attractive to the community and also to the utility. That's just something that would really help clear up this picture a lot.
So I have a question. This is Sierra. What about approaching it from a resiliency perspective? Having been in Upper Michigan,
yeah.
I know that could be an issue.
Yep. And we had, in the polar vortex winter of 2013-2014, we had ground depth freeze until 7 and 8 feet. And let run orders where water just ran through entire neighborhoods of the city for weeks to try to keep the pipes from freezing, and still pipes froze, and it was a significant cost to this community and to other communities around us, millions of dollars that nobody had to have to rebuild the water system. And the city has done I'm forgetting the acronym right now, but I think it's ESCO, where they an energy services contract with Johnson Controls. So the city's spending $3 million to save $5 million on its energy use. So we kind of backdoored into that. But the municipal utility was not part of that conversation. And, in fact, it was done in part because of the 30% increase in rates by the utility. So they're not working together, and that's another part of this political push, is to make some of that happen. So if that helps, that and then that notion of being self-sufficient is very, very, very important. And the notion is, well, we have a gas plant, so we don't have to rely on Wisconsin. That was the selling point. We can take care of our own power. We're an island that can take care of our own power versus the rest of around us. Everyone has to get the power from Wisconsin.
Yeah, but we were talking earlier about the way you design the solar tariffs. If I were the municipal utility, I would be a little worried about the death spiral you talked about. Like if you've got that gas plant, but then a lot of your customers end up going with solar on their own and they own it, then that's just load that decreases for the utility. Whereas if the utility structured it so that they own the rooftop solar, and we've done this some in Virginia, and as somebody said earlier, they get a lot more transparency with the generation there. I wonder if the utility would be interested in owning, say, the rooftop solar simply to stop the death spiral that was happening elsewhere.
Right, and that I think that's a good. And these are all. I like this as a. And if you had examples in Virginia that I could point to, that would be helpful.
Sure.
Thank you.
Any other thoughts here? Okay.
Sarah, I'll jump in again. Ron Larson. I made a mistake about Northern Michigan University. It was Michigan Tech in Houghton, but you're about 100 miles away, and I would look at that. But I'm intrigued by the fact that you've already got biomass in your system. And I have not heard the word combined heat and power. You may be able to solve both electric and thermal needs economically through a biomass plant. Over.
Yeah, thank you, Ron. Actually, and Northern Michigan University made a significant investment in a biomass plant with the goal of, you know, supporting the local timbering industry all around us. But the cost of natural gas has made that uneconomical, even though we're surrounded by trees. It's and also the economics of biomass are difficult because the timbersry and forestry products industry is maximizing as much as they possibly can every scrap of wood that doesn't remain on the floor. We don't clear cut here. That stopped a while ago, but they are just not scrap to burn. And the only wind development we have currently is Weyerhaeuser, now owns hundreds of thousands of acres west of here, and is looking at putting in 35 to 50 turbines, but would require a 20-mile connection to our biggest transmission line in the peninsula. So I guess, and I'm not to be I see all these as opportunities. Like there's all these interesting things happening here because we're sort of on the edge of this old system that really I think is failing. And it's how to help people find a path forward is. And that question of setting policy to have the goals to move towards, I've really come away with the value of that. Yeah, and then looking at some of these cost figures, it's been very helpful to me. So thank you, everyone.
Jen, this is Rick Riebstein. I also want to refer back, someone talked about community choice aggregation, which is a great way of raising people's awareness and getting them involved in the kind of clean power transition. And also, if you could incorporate in your planning, your community plan, community solar, so that everyone could participate. This whole thing about how we're not allowed to favor those who can afford to put it on their rooftop, it's very divisive. So you need to counter that to get everyone involved and make sure it's solar for all. And so you need to incorporate something like a community solar in this in order to capture that. And the community choice aggregation helps with that too.
You know, Jen, one thought here is that you were talking earlier about high school students. Education in schools might go a long ways to move this whole project forward. Yeah. You can get people involved in schools and talking about solar. And some schools, actually, you're talking about one of the schools doing solar. They, one of the schools in Colorado here actually had the students monitoring the solar and the meter, watching it and taking notes on it, doing it as part of their project. So, you know, that may be one way to get kids involved and possibly parents.
Yeah, thank you. I think there's new energy. I didn't use the word energy, but there. I think there's potential for that here. We I think Marquette prides itself on its outdoor recreation, mountain biking, the access to the lake, things like that. We national destination, trying to become a national destination for mountain biking. So there's a level of interest there. So it's bringing all these forces together as opposed to being divisive.
This is Evan. I had a comment on what was said about the divisiveness of the of the utility avoiding that by saying we're not going to favor solar, and the implication being because favoring solar is favoring the rich who can afford to put it on their roof. George pointed out that you look for things that you can do that are win for the customer and for the utility. And I think it was Rick pointed out that if the utility owns the solar, then they get to take credit for the renewable generation, and they would then put up the upfront cost of the solar. So what the suggestion would be then is that the utility find a way to pay for and own the solar on a rooftop and split the economic benefit with the customer, so the customer sees benefit also.
Can I just add one thing real quick? In terms of there was a question earlier about what to do with the natural gas plant and sort of how to pay for that in this sort of future that you're imagining. And I mean, TVA has had to write off, I mean, an entire nuclear plant that they ended up not using. So it's not totally unheard of that the economics of offering the lowest, best rates to the customers would preclude just mothballing it. I mean, that's not, and paying, I mean, eventually paying it out, but from the savings rather than from ratepayers. Does that make sense?
Oh, I hadn't thought about that, of paying it off, that there's the savings coming from not running it.
Yeah, yes.
Oh, yeah.
Also, do you know what this is George, do you know what the actual payback period is for that investment in that gas plant?
20 years.
Is it 20? Okay.
Yeah.
That's not, yeah. Okay. Because the point was made earlier about how this is going to phase in. I mean, anything you do with solar is going to phase in quite slowly. And, but 20-year plan is it's not going to be that slow.
What's the capacity of the natural gas plant? Generation capacity?
It's not much because our system just isn't much. I think they are 3.7 megawatts. I should know this. Sorry. You know, they're basically just the engines out of cruise ships is really what they are. The company that makes them, staff got to go over. I've seen the videos. They took pictures. They got to visit the factory. They're from Finland. The company's Wärtsilä, which is Finnish, which is a big, more Finnish here. It was an interesting time trying to come in at that time, trying to make the arguments about what. And at the time, Michigan didn't have an energy law. We were in between this period. It was really a missed opportunity, and we are stuck with natural gas.
Can I mention something? There's a personal relational aspect to this, which is that when you make the case that it was a really stupid decision, you embarrass people.
Yeah.
So just keep that in mind.
Yeah. I'm not one of the folks who have said that publicly.
No, but you've got to find a way to make the case without doing that.
Yeah, what I said publicly was, do we have enough information? That's what I keep saying. Do we have enough information to make this decision? I wonder if we do.
Well, it's better to say we have enough information to see the value of phasing this out at some point in the future and making a transition, rather than we have enough information to know that was a really dumb thing to do.
Does anybody have any case studies that might help her as far as showing the economic benefits of what she's trying to do?
I have a quick question before we go to that. This is Evan. This 3x7 megawatts or something like that, is that all of the generation that the small utility owns, or is it 90% of the generation they own, or what?
That is 90%. That is the 10% from the hydro. And
which is utility owned also.
Correct.
Mm-hmm.
And then we buy off the grid now because it's even cheaper.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And then our peak, the other knock on solar up here, which is that our peak is winter because of it's because it's so cold. Even it's still, we're getting warmer, but we are still cold and it's dark. We're 46 and a half degrees here. We're the equivalent of Duluth. I try to talk about Duluth, but that doesn't always fly either. People don't get tired of that comparison.
I think that highlights the importance of answering the storage question. In terms of maximizing the value of the investment, if whether it's utility scale storage or distributed storage, I think that's, you've got to have a compelling solution for that.
Thank you.
I think there's, as an example, I'll see if I can find it, but there's a community up in Alaska that's really remote that used, I think, a flywheel.
Yeah, it was Ketchikan.
Yeah, that sounds right.
Yeah. Yeah, and that's a good point.
Anything else? Okay.
Are the iron and copper mines underground?
The copper mines are all gone. They shut down, and there's talk of reviving one. It would be underground. We have one remaining iron mine that is open pit. You can see it if you Google Palmer, Michigan. You can see it from space. The hole that is the mine is as big as the footprint of our city of 20,000 people.
The reason I ask about underground is the compressed air storage. In fact, one was proposed in Colorado, and there are two or three of them in the country, somewhat like pump storage, but underground air pumping.
Yeah, they are looking at that at the old copper mine country, which is not where Marquette is, but where Michigan Tech is. There are viable examples of that happening right now because there is water down there at a steady state.
Anything else?
Going back to the large amount of biomass you have, you might have to bid against other uses of wood, but do you have any sense of what the price of wood is there?
I'm sorry, I don't. I just know I know the manager of the NMU heating and cooling, their facilities manager, and she keeps that biomass plant clean, and we walk around. She gives tours. We walk around in it. they would turn it on the second they could. They just can't.
Because of the price of biomass?
Because of the price of natural gas, primarily.
So this is George. I got one more quick comment on that. Evan and I did a lot of work in the 90s with respect to biomass energy and all over the country. And the one clear conclusion is everything comes down to fuel cost, and fuel cost comes down to using waste fuels, which have some cost associated with them to actually, you know, properly dispose of them. For example, if you have municipal wood waste that are going to the landfill, they're paying usually to do that. And those are examples where you can make biomass still work in this economy, but they're hard to find.
Yeah, there's a professor at Northern who came here from Vermont, from Goddard College, where they have successfully done that. So, again, I we are poised when the moment comes. But they locked in a contract for natural gas. I believe it expires in 2019 at these very, very favorable rates. So I believe they had a seven-year contract.
Let me urge you to Google for the words Stockholm and biochar. They say they're saving money in part because of the economic value of producing charcoal at the same time as I'm pretty sure they're doing electricity in Stockholm. It's the only city, to my knowledge, anywhere in the world that's doing anything on carbon dioxide removal.
Anybody else? Okay. We're almost at the hour, so thanks for everybody for attending, and Jen, thanks for your interesting dilemma up there. I think we all share the problem in most parts of the country. I hope you guys on the East Coast survived the last storms that you've had. It looks pretty devastating. And we'll have a webinar next week. And George is going to be talking about utilities. My bad. Shalom Flank is going to be talking about district energy. So,
scared me there.
Sorry, George.
Like, I am?
My bad. I had 4 hours of sleep last night, so forgive me if I'm a little bit wishy-washy here. So anyhow, but Shalom Flank is going to be talking about district energy. I think it's in 2 weeks, actually, on the 20th, so keep that in mind. And thanks, everybody, for coming. Thanks for the people on the panel and all the contributions to the solution. I hope, Jen, that you got something out of this conversation that you can take. So, see you all next time.
See you, Sierra. Bye.
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 Thank you.
Bye.